When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. So ESPN did a little exercise with their football probability index. That's when they throw stuff into a computer and they simulate things and they put up the results. Mm-hmm. And they simulated, Seth, the rest of the NFL football season. So here's what the computers came up with for the Houston Texans. This is how things are going to go, according to the FPI on ESPN.com, for the rest of the year. Week 16, how would you feel about a 28-24 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs on Saturday?
Depending on how it all went down, yeah. I wouldn't be jumping out of the 19th floor of this building or
especially
anything.
Especially if it was back and forth. You know, if they're down 28-10 and they score a couple touchdowns to make it close.
Right. Yeah, but they're like, is it a genuine close game?
Right.
It's not a garbage time production type of thing. Didn't involve any egregious game management errors. But other than that, all right. Yeah, I can live with that because you got a game versus the Ravens coming up in 5 days.
Yeah.
And plus, it's hard to jump out of it. I've tried. These windows are solid up here.
Have you tried?
Yeah.
Do you try to kick the window in, or do you just like lunge?
I try to do it with my shoulder.
You do?
I feel like it's meant to be. It's meant to be.
Don't you have a bad shoulder?
Yeah, that's part of the pain. That's part
of why I want to jump out of the building. Yeah. My shoulder hurts too much.
I feel like as long as I leave it up to the fates of whether the window is strong enough or not,
yeah,
then it won't be considered suicide in the eyes of
God.
There
you go.
You know, I'll just be like, you're just, you know. You didn't know. Every other time you've tried it, it's failed. This time, you got a pass.
28-24, week 16, the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Houston Texans, according to these FPI computers from ESPN. Week 17, okay. How about this? Week 17, the computers say that the Texans are going to defeat the Baltimore Ravens 34-14.
That's what the computer said?
A 20-point win over the Baltimore Ravens.
In Baltimore?
No, it's here. It's Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah, Christmas. I got them flopped.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
In Houston.
In Houston.
Okay, so the Texans pass rush at home, where it's just been, this defense has been a nightmare for opposing quarterbacks at home. I don't know if that's factored in or not. But that's my little computer and my noggin thinks that that's a big deal. That's why I would rather, even though the Texans are a better matchup versus the Steelers, I'd rather face, if I'm going to try to make a deep push in the playoffs, I'd rather face the Ravens at home instead of in the divisional round in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm surprised that the margin is that big.
Yeah, I am too.
That's very surprising to me, especially because the Texans have struggled to score more than 30 points this season. They've done it versus the Cowboys and the Patriots.
Well, and Baltimore's not a great defense. We know that, but we know what the Texans are offensively. Here's what's interesting. Week 18, meaningless game in this scenario because they played out the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a meaningless game for the Texans. They lose in Tennessee 31-28 to the Tennessee Titans.
I wouldn't worry about it because it's a meaningless game.
I wouldn't worry about it either.
Those guys are going to be rested.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this. That the Texans, under this scenario, and we'll talk about what the playoffs look like here by these computers in a second, Now, they'd be 1-2 in these two games. They would finish the season 10-7. That would get everybody their over for their 9.5 over win tickets in Vegas. So everybody be happy about that. If they go 24 points, 34 points, and 28 points in the final three games of the season, that has me feeling a whole lot better about the offense going into the postseason.
Well, you know, you brought up earlier that you're kind of surprised that the Texans, as of right now, are where on the scoring
offense? They were 11th going into the Miami game, and I would imagine 20 points in the Miami game probably doesn't move them very
much. Where it doesn't feel like, because they haven't had huge outputs or anything, that it feels like they've been, at best, like dead center of the pack.
Yeah.
They haven't been blanked offensively.
Right.
And I think part of that is what we talked about earlier. They have the ability for hero ball. A lot of these games, they're at least getting a deep shot to Nico Collins, or Joe Mixon breaks off a big run, whatever it might be. And then also because the Texans' defense is so opportunistic. Texans right now they're in the top three for turnover margin. They've got the second most interceptions in the league. And that creates opportunities to score. So, but the difference is we just haven't seen a high-powered Texans offense, one that just marches down the field relentlessly. That to be pushing up against 30 points against some good defenses, solid defenses, not best defense in the league, then that would be progress.
That'd be progress, even at 1-2. I would sign up for this end of the season right here, based solely on that. The 1-2 part doesn't bother me. They're going to be the 4 seed in all likelihood, regardless of how things unfold in the postseason. This is a funny comment on the text page. 34-14 over the Ravens. We finally found the computer that actually got hit by Y2K. Hey, now. All right, so the way in this simulation that the playoffs line up are kind of how it's lined up right now. Kansas City 1, Baltimore 2. This is AFC seeding. Pittsburgh 3. The Texans 4th, and then the 3 wildcard teams, all 10-7, just like the Texans, are 5 Baltimore, 6 Chargers, 7 Broncos. Mm-hmm. So they play all the tiebreakers out and everything, you know, division record, head-to-head, everything. Baltimore has beaten both the Chargers and the Broncos this year, so if there's a tie with either of those teams, the Texans will be getting the Ravens as the 5 seed in the playoffs, and apparently the Ravens had revenge on their mind in this computer simulation.
Damn it, computer.
Because they come to NRG Stadium, the very stadium they got blown out in this computer 3 weeks prior, or 4 weeks maybe, whatever it is. 34-14, the Ravens come back in here and beat the Texans by a field goal, 27-24.
So
season over.
So this is the thing. There's a good chance, based on this computer, which I'll remind everybody, has the Texans beating the Ravens 34-14.
Week 17.
At home.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And this is where the computer models kind of screw things up at times, is when something's different, if there's an anomaly, that they can't, it's not running it against, the computer can't go back and look at all the various times that a team has played on Christmas Day on short rest after a short week the week before. Maybe they're overly weighting that of being on the road on a short week at the end of the year.
Yep.
Maybe they've gone back in and looked at how different various Thursday night teams have performed late in the season when injuries have mounted. So being on the road after a short week, in which you also had a short week the week before, that's a big wild card in how it affects a team.
The computer also has the Ravens losing to the Steelers this coming weekend.
Uh-huh.
So maybe some of it's baked in, like, let down.
We got
swept by the Steelers.
And they're probably locked into the 5 seed at that point.
Or at least the wild card, at least the playoff spot.
Yeah.
If I'm the Ravens, I think the Ravens are the one team that's kind of hovering around this wild card fringe that they don't give a crap where they're seated. You know, like I think the Ravens feel, as long as we're in the dance, we're the Baltimore Ravens. We can go play with anybody.
It's this the way it worked out in terms of the schedule makers for this two game stretch here, where all these teams, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Kansas City, and Houston, are going to play on Saturday and then play again on Christmas Day. It worked out about as well as they could have envisioned it, other than the fact that Texans are. You know, the Texans are just, you don't feel as solid about those other teams in the playoffs. But in the way it is on paper, you got the four division leaders all squaring off against each other.
They're
not division leaders, but potential division leaders.
Right, guys in the Ravens
in contention
and Steelers.
For the, in contention for the division right there at the end of the season.
Yeah.
That's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
And that's what I tell people, too, because some people will still say, I feel like the league's out to get us the way they schedule these games.
It's the opposite.
If you believe that the league is also out to get Kansas City, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and the Ravens.
Yeah.
If anything, it's a tip of the cap more so than anything.
I think in their heart of hearts, the schedule makers may have bought into the Texans' offseason. Because the schedule comes out in May after all those moves had been made with Diggs and everything. I think they envision the Texans being where the Bills are right now, and maybe the Bills being among those wild card teams.
Mm-hmm.
If the Texans were where the Bills are right now, you would have the 1 and 2 seeds going against each other on Christmas Day, and you'd have the 1 and 2 seeds going in at it this weekend on Saturday, Ravens Steelers Saturday, and then you'd have Ravens. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still pretty good, but it'd be even better.
Well, but it's even. But you got the Broncos and Chargers tonight.
Yeah.
So from Thursday through Wednesday, inside of 1 week on the calendar, you're getting all these teams facing off against other playoff teams.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Well, this one was the one tonight is dumb luck. I don't think anybody planned on Denver being a 9-5 team.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Well,
like
they flexed this one though too.
Did they flex this one?
I think that I thought this was flat. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, who knows?
I don't keep up with the flexing stuff.
The Super Bowl that the computer spit out: Buffalo 27, Detroit 13. That's a lot of optimism about Detroit getting to the Super Bowl right now. I think the consensus seems to be that Detroit, because of all these injuries on defense, I'm not going to say they're running on fumes, but they're vulnerable. You know, Detroit's going to have to win a bunch of shootouts to get there, probably.
Yeah, yeah. They
just don't have guys.
Do they have the most IR designations in the league? They do by a long margin. I saw a graphic yesterday.
Yeah.
The one side of that graphic that I saw that I liked was that the Texans are kind of smack dab in the middle of guys on IR.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's notable just because last year, I think a lot of people were starting to worry that, hey, is this D'Amico Swarm style of play in practice? Does it end up with more guys getting injured? This year, at least, it hasn't been an issue compared to the rest of the NFL. So, for whatever that's worth, if that makes it doesn't bring Stefon Diggs back.
No, it does not.
It is a difference.
It does not.
This is the first time they flexed into a Thursday night.
Okay.
Broncos Giants.
Okay.
The
Broncos.
Or Broncos.
Broncos Chargers.
Sorry, I'm looking at a picture of John Mara. But dope.
What's up with Saquon? There's a texter here saying, I understand it would be a meaningless game, but being swept by the Titans this season, that would be tough. I'll tell you the worst part about that, about if the Texans, and this is why I do kind of want them to treat that Tennessee game like it's at least somewhat meaningful. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the starters see it treated like a preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not going to have played a game since Christmas. Do you want the Texans to go into a game on January the 11th, a playoff game, having not played football since Christmas Day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I could see the starters playing some of that Tennessee game. But the most painful part would be your road winning streak that you've got in the AFC South right now. It's a 9-game road winning streak. I want that thing to continue forever. Yes. And you have a road winning streak, I believe, against the Tennessee Titans right now. I think you've beaten the Tennessee Titans on the road a few times.
I don't know. It's the AFC road win streak doesn't do it for me just because it's the AFC South.
Divisional road
win streak. It's weird. I know you appreciate it just because it's so statistically unlikely.
Correct.
I get that.
Yeah.
It won't cause me any actual emotional pain.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, damn it. We had a good thing going. 2024 was going to be a good year, Brandy. It's over. It's all over.
I can't promise I won't be that way if it happens. I might slam my fist
sounds
on the
like
table.
Sounds like you've already put money on it. So that's what it sounds like
I
to
gotta
me.
I got to check.
You degenerate.
I might have.
Yeah.
I got to check. I got to check and see if that's the case. Hey, by the way, the favorite to land Kirk Cousins next year, if he's not on the
Who
Falcons, the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
4-1.
Yeah.
According to the odds makers.
Do it, Amy Adams.
Dude, that would be awesome. Kirk Cousins on the Titans.
Sound off like you got a pair and bring Kirk Cousins home to Tennessee.
They asked Will Levis yesterday in his media availability. Will Levis benched again.
Mm.
Benched this week. there's a reporter that asked him, almost asked a question with the assumption that he's not the guy anymore. Yeah. Take a listen.
Well, you talked back in training camp how eager you were to go out and prove that you could be this team's quarterback and franchise quarterback in the league. Well, why do you think that did not happen?
I don't think that that's the end of the conversation. I still believe that I can be the franchise quarterback for this team. I have the utmost confidence in myself and my ability to lead any team in this league. And I think that this year was great development for me, and I think that I truly did improve. And sure as heck don't want to go out like that. And I know that, you know, there's a positive future for me, whether it's here or somewhere else, and I just got to, you know, have the conversations I need to here, and hopefully I can show and prove that I can still be the guy.
Do you think Will Levis gets that, that if he's not, if it doesn't work out in Tennessee, are any teams going to be hot to give Will Levis the Sam Darnold opportunity?
Like I don't think there'll be teams that are intrigued by him or are going to give him an opportunity, I don't know, to step in and start, but kind of like Baker Mayfield in Tampa else. I think if Will Levis is looking for any kind of example of quarterbacks who had a rough go of it the first couple years and then eventually it clicked, we've got more examples than ever of that in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. Now, Baker Mayfield looked a lot better in his first few years than Will Levis has at any
point. No doubt. He got him to the playoffs.
Baker Mayfield's his shoulder injury that he was trying to play through was worse than anything else. But yeah, I think Will Levis, he'll go back to one of those. Einstein's got a bunch of great quotes about failure. Failure is success in progress. That's one of them.
Oh.
It's just, yeah, if you're... That's why I never like these questions about... Like, when they asked Antetokounmpo, was this season a failure? Like, you can define failure any which way you want.
You had a good answer to
that, there's different categories of, okay, we succeeded in this regard, failed in this regard, but it's always a stepping stone. You know, it's only final if you make it that way. So, good job, young mayonnaise pitch man. You did it. You're reframing the failure the right way.
Good job. Good job, Will Levis. John Gruden was on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. What was it like coaching Antonio Brown? You remember that one summer where Antonio Brown fried his feet?
Yeah, in France.
Didn't like the way his helmet fit.
He roasted his feet in a cryo chamber like it was a French delicacy or something.
Gruden's answer may surprise you about Antonio Brown.
No, it won't.
This podcast, but it may surprise the audience.
Oh, okay.
So, that's coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I just had something happen on Twitter that almost never happens, Seth. Normally when people remind you of things that you predicted on Twitter, they're you know, they're freezing cold taking you.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pulling something
showing
up.
You what an idiot you were.
Right. I just had somebody pull up a tweet that I posted on day two of the draft.
Mm.
It's from JJ on Twitter.
Sounds like JJ Watt.
At Clutch, but okay. Instead of the letter L, it's the number one.
That's definitely a JJ Watt burner account.
Maybe. And he or she says, well done, at Sean T. Pendergast, and retweeted my tweet from draft day where I said, Nick Caserio's last three third-round picks, 2021, Nico Collins, 2022, Christian Harris, 2023, Tank Dell. And then I do that thing where you put some slashes around it to indicate that you're doing something. I said, opens up stockbroker app, loads purchase 10,000 shares of Kalen Bullock.
Ah.
Hit send.
Ooh.
Pretty good job by me.
You're right,
JJ. That was pretty good.
Kalen Bullock, and that's like, you know, Kalen Bullock, people in the offseason were very understandably saying, hey, how come they're not addressing the safety position? Why, hey, Justin Simmons is out there. And the answer, which made nobody happy, was that they addressed it by drafting Kalen Bullock. And I think you look at Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock, both guys who are not first-round picks, but have played better than the majority of first-round picks do rookie year
in
the defensive backfield. So, yeah, that's been a slam dunk. I mean, the way the secondary is playing right now, if you include a healthy Jalen Petrie in all of that, that's nothing but homegrown youth. You know, Kalen Bullock, Kamari Lassiter, and Derek Stingley. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. With Petrie, as you just said, added to it. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job drafting in the secondary.
I think the thing that I don't think anybody was really worried about, but that, you know, you hoped would come to fruition is, at the very least, when you hired DeMeco, man, he had proven himself as a very good defensive coordinator, but just for 2 years in San Francisco. So the fact that in the course of the last 2 years, I think this last game especially is really, wow, okay, it's taken less than 2 years, and this is the kind of defense that DeMeco wants. And they are peaking at just the right moment.
Yep.
And without two of their hardest hitters, they're still a ferociously hard-hitting football team.
No doubt. John Gruden was on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. That's Taylor Lewan and Will Compton's podcast, two former Tennessee Titans. Good podcast. He was on there and it was about an hour long episode, I think, talked about a lot of things, but talked openly about coaching Antonio Brown. If you recall, Antonio Brown became an Oakland Raider back in the summer of 2019.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, Antonio'd his way out of Pittsburgh.
Right. Yeah. That was his first stay after Pittsburgh, right? The trade to Oakland.
Yeah. They traded like a third and a fifth for him.
So Antonio Brown was in France and got some kind of cryotherapy, but didn't wear the booties they give you.
Yeah.
So they were burnt to a crisp.
That was Gruden's first taste of Antonio Brown. The question was, what was it like coaching him?
Although real quick, he'd already seen Antonio Brown in the mini camps. So there was that element to it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Here was John Gruden on what it was like coaching Antonio Brown.
I never got around Antonio enough. You know, Antonio showed up on a hot air balloon. He had his feet fried. He had cryotherapy. I never even heard of cryotherapy. And he had an issue with his helmet. He wasn't happy. The NFL wouldn't let him wear his helmet. So we really never got him around the guys very much. I didn't have very much interaction with him at all. Really, one of the most frustrating things in my coaching career was not getting him to play for us. Mm. We had a mini camp. I tell you, we had a mini camp back in Oakland. He put on a display. He took some of our routes that we like to call lookies. I got all these words. He made the routes look better than anybody I've ever seen. And his conditioning was sick. If we didn't have a fence around the field, he might have got killed by a car because he finishes everything. He'll run 100 miles an hour. I went home and got hammered one night after minicamp. I told my wife, I said, we're going to complete every pass. That's how good this guy looked. He was phenomenal. And unfortunately, I never got him for one freaking game.
The other thing I took from that, the player in me, was like, yeah, camp's a real grind, I guess. But the coaches, meanwhile, are going home and getting hammered.
Getting hammered.
All right, yeah.
That way, he's celebrating. He thinks he's got the next great thing. That's funny. The description is? It's like he's describing like a completely like psychopath, maladjusted version of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
That's what Diggs was in camp with the Texans.
But they cannot be controlled at all. Except that with Antonio Brown, I think the athleticism was still, like, he was still at his peak athleticism. Stephon Diggs isn't the peak athlete that he was. Yeah. That's the shame of it all is that
and both he, day three picks and, also
and, you know, and again, that's another one with Antonio Brown. I think people's knee-jerk reaction would be like, oh, he just shows up and he's not putting the time in. No, I think he's one of these guys kind of like Gronkowski that just never stops working out.
Right.
He's always in shape. You can drop, he can step off the bus and be ready to go. And but he just, that was when he was really, I don't even want to say going crazy, because I think he's got legitimate mental health issues, yeah. You know? I mean, that's when it was really starting to come full circle. That was he was running off the rails mentally.
It was funny, because when people bring up Antonio Brown like that, they always bring up the Vontaze Burfict hit on him in the playoff game back in 2015, 2016-ish, where Vontaze Burfict just, I mean, clearly, intentionally, we've seen a lot of that hit lately because of the Al Shaier hit. The Burfict hit was much dirtier than the Al Shaier hit. He was going straight for Antonio Brown's head, knocked him out, knocked him loopy out of that playoff game. And a lot of people attributes, you know, Antonio Brown after that Burfict hit, he wasn't the same. They were teammates on this Oakland team, the two of them.
For Burfict, a brief period of time.
For a brief period of time. And you're going to hear from Gruden. He talked about, we had some high character guys on the team.
Uh-huh.
So that meant we could bring in some characters.
Right.
Yeah.
I always felt this, if you have football character on your team, and we felt our coaching staff, you know, we had Derek Carr, we had some really good veteran players, good football character, let's bring in some characters. So we bring in Burfict. You know, Burfict really is, he's a great guy, and he's a smart guy. He just knocks the shit out of you. And what's wrong with that? I mean, I that's my feeling. And I think if you do have the character in place, you can bring in some characters and have some fun. And Richie Incognito's a great guy. Don't kid yourself on Burfict either. He's really smart. He's really a hell of a guy. He's misunderstood, perhaps, by some. And I really enjoyed Antonio Brown. I mean, hell, he went out with my son. He cut a song. They got a song out there. I'm not even going to tell you the name.
Okay. Oh, somebody's found it already.
I looked for it yesterday. Yeah. I Googled for a good two minutes for it.
That is the dream scenario is always that your locker room is so strong and the culture is so good that you can there's a tolerance for some of the guys who are kind of out on the fringe. You know, the Warriors with Draymond Green, perfect example, where almost the guy who's on the lunatic fringe actually almost kind of balances things out in a way, because you don't want too many choir boys. You don't want a bunch of goody two shoes that just, you want a little crazy on your team.
Some edge.
But you got to have a really good environment, because the danger is that you don't want the younger impressionable players to start looking at, oh, that's what I need to be like. So you need to have enough veterans that are like, no, that's for him. Can you run like Antonio? No, you cannot.
Yeah.
So you are not allowed to act like Antonio.
That's right.
You got to have enough veterans to explain to the young guys, you're not that guy. The guy that we have, the space we have reserved on this team for a guy like that is being occupied by Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
They will get rid of you in a heartbeat if you try to pull that crap.
Yeah. Well, the problem, too, with the Raiders was they just didn't draft any good players while Gruden and Mike Mayock were.
But in terms of what Gruden is talking about, look, Belichick was very much that way.
Yes.
Belichick would bring in an Albert Haynesworth or whomever else.
Very fair point.
They brought in Antonio Brown just to see if it works. And if it doesn't, you got to cut ties real quickly. Yeah. But that's how good Antonio Brown was, that Tom Brady was desperate to get Antonio Brown down there because Tom Brady could see exactly what he could do and what he was capable
of. Well, and Brady also saw, keep in mind, that was the season that by the end of the season, Brady is yelling at his receivers to run faster.
Run faster.
He had bad receivers there. Yeah. That was his last year in New England. Like, that was when he first kind of looked around and was like, all right, I actually do kind of need some guys around me.
And
here,
it's all right, you know, like, okay, well, we compromise our values a little bit. You try to. You don't want it to be like Harlem Nights, where the guy at the bar is, you know, being come on to by the attractive woman.
Right.
And calls his wife up and says, honey, I ain't never coming home no more. Yeah, like, you don't want to do that. You can't abandon everything.
No.
But you got to have, keep her as your side piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes, I do. Good analogy. Text message. In the D'Amico mic'd up, did y'all see D'Amico call out that tight end screen, then say, I knew that was a tight end screen. I did. I was encouraged to see that. I think, I can't remember, do we talk on air or off
we
air about D'Amico mic'd
about
up?
It.
You and I talked.
Yeah.
D'Amico mic'd up is out. It's 8 minutes. It's really good. It's a lot of D'Amico, you know, cheering on his guys. You know, if you're looking for a lot of moments like that one where he calls out plays like the Christian Harris INT, there's not a lot of that. I think it's just cool watching. I think it's cool watching somebody enjoy their job that much. That dude loves what he does.
Yeah, man. He really, really does. And
loves
I think that moment there is kind of like last year when he when he called out Christian Harris's pick six against Cleveland. The true value of D'Amico, though, I think, is that he's able to transfer that education to the guys on the field and make them smarter football players. Aziz Alshire is kind of that way. And, you know, surprise, surprise, he came up with D'Amico as his linebackers coach and then defensive coordinator. So that's the part that's really cool, is that I think you start to have a more high football IQ defense. I'd love to be able to say anything like this about the offensive side of the ball, but we don't have any evidence of it.
For those of you wondering, like, what were the interactions like with Bobby Slowik on the sidelines? I think there's people who are, you know, sort of like keeping an eye on the whole Slowik situation. D'Amico gave him a gigantic hug before the game.
Well,
like,
yeah,
let's go,
no way,
baby.
In hell. Yeah.
A bigger hug than anybody else.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is the thing that nobody wants to hear at 8:35 in the morning, but I'm trying to keep the things in context. I mean, it's hard. I think they're committed to Bobby Slowik. If you want to feel better about it, at the very least, look at what the Chiefs are as an offense this year. They are the Houston Texans. They've scored 329 points. The Texans have scored 328 points. They both have quarterbacks that they feel really good about, but things just aren't working. So if you want to look at the bright side of things, all right, this can happen to the best of them. It's happening to Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes this year. The difference is that Bobby does not have the track record that Andy Reid has. But I think that the way the Texans are thinking about it, it seems like they're probably committed to Bobby, and they're just going to try to fix all of these things here, you know, A, right now, but then B, in the offseason and moving forward.
Yeah. What's the biggest reason it's happening to the Chiefs, do you think?
I think a lot of it comes back down to the pass rush and how it's affecting the quarterback. Mm-hmm. That there's a lack of timing and rhythm. But then also with the Chiefs, all right, Travis Kelce, we've seen this. It's been a gradual decline in Travis Kelce's effectiveness. And we saw it last year, too, in the regular season, but it just didn't matter when it came to the postseason.
That's right.
So I was talking to Ron about this yesterday, and I think, hopefully I don't frame his words poorly, I think Ron is more concerned about Mahomes' ability to make the big plays, the big-time throws, than the average Kansas City fan. It seems like he really hasn't had that same ability consistently to make these marquee plays and throws downfield that he used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's based on the past. I mean, they've had issues at offensive tackle forever. And this year it's no different. They're going to play Tony, however they pronounce it, the guard, moved out to play left tackle last week and did a respectable job versus Myles Garrett. But I think it was pretty clear that he's not a natural-born left tackle. And that's the fourth left tackle that they've started this year.
Yeah.
And then Juwan Taylor on the other side is just, he's banged up and injured, and he's just not necessarily, he's never really lived up to his potential. And it just throws everything off kilter.
Boy, I hope Ron's right. somebody whose team exists in the same AFC ecosystem as Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
If Mahomes is showing some signs of deterioration, is probably too strong a word. It's not an old guy. I don't even know if Patrick Mahomes is 30 years old yet. But if he were starting to have trouble doing some of the things that made him peak level Mahomes, it wouldn't be so bad.
Maybe whatever the accumulated trauma of various injuries,
maybe it's just started
to kind of mess up his anatomical chain.
Yeah,
he's had
so many ankle injuries he can't throw deep anymore.
Be a real shame.
Too bad. Too bad. Yeah. So sad. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Speaking of the Texans defense, let's hear from Matt Burke. He talked about Patrick Mahomes. What are the biggest concerns with Mahomes for the game this coming Saturday? Noon kick on Saturday here on Sports Radio 610. We'll hear from the Texans DC. Coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, this is a Kansas City Chiefs offense that has a lot of pelts on the wall historically. Not sure if you know this, but they've won a few Super Bowls in the last few years. They're the opponent for your Houston Texans on Saturday. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610 as we welcome you back in. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. So let's find out from the Texans defensive coordinator, Matt Burke, what he thinks of this Kansas City offense. He was asked about Patrick Mahomes and his ability to improvise and scramble. That might be hindered a little bit by a bum ankle that he's on right now. Here's Matt Burke.
You know, we've played a lot of mobile quarterbacks and guys that escape and make off schedule plays. I think he's probably the most the least predictable of where he's going with it or where he's getting out. Like some guys, you know, kind of where their favorite to escape to or light the flush, or they don't want to go away from the thrown hand, or they want to step up, or he'll do it all. You know, and he steps up, then drops back, then spins and goes and gets out. So that's the first piece, is I think it's he's a lot more unpredictable in where he's escaping to and how you're trying to corral him.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, the scramble drill. It's he's got more options available to him, and his ability to kind of read the coverage and understand, I think, how his scrambling can manipulate the coverage. His receivers, or at least Travis Kelce, is on the same page with him there. We talk about why he's maybe not quite the same guy this year. Part of that is, okay, Xavier Worthy's a rookie. Hollywood Brown's been injured. And like that ESP connection with his receivers when he's scrambling isn't the same either. Nope. So I think he's still very much capable of making the big time throws. I don't think he has many opportunities. Now, the heyday was back when Tyreek Hill, Mahomes would scramble and Tyreek Hill would have 8 yards of separation, yeah, and then it's off to the races. And he still had that with Travis Kelce last year, and he still has it this year, but Kelsey's just slowly declining, sure, in his ability.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's what you have to be hyper aware of, is that, man, I cannot lose track of A, where my zone is in zone coverage and who's entering it and leaving it, or if I'm attached to a guy, I got to stay attached to Travis Kelce's hip no matter what. And taking a look back at the quarterback is probably going to be the thing that gets the ball completed on me. That's where it gets dicey, and because then that's when if Mahomes decides to run, your defensive backs are all attached at the hip to their guys, and he gets 20 yards rushing because everybody's eyes are facing directly away from him.
Mahomes is wild, man, because you think about quarterback, good quarterbacks, and there's some quarterbacks you go, oh, he can throw from any arm slot.
Yeah.
You know, there's other quarterbacks you go, yeah, no, he's really good at scrambling. He gets out of the pocket. He's able to move. Yeah. He's very mobile. They talk about CJ a lot. What's his big thing? He keeps his eyes downfield. Like, he's, yeah, still seeing the whole field. Mahomes does all of those things.
Right. And CJ does it. CJ does it with Nico really, really well in the, yeah, scramble drill. And we've noticed that difference, obviously, since when he's at both those Nico Collins touchdowns, he had to extend the play. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to call it a scramble or not, he had to extend the play on both, yep, of those, and it wasn't the first read that ended up being the touchdown. I think that's where the one thing that's been kind of strange about CJ this year is that when he does pull the ball down, It almost feels like he's more of a rookie quarterback this year than he was last year, and that he'll do a full turn in the pocket and reverse course and run out the back of the pocket, and just, it's more so, it looks more improvisational. But when young quarterbacks do it, it looks more like they're doing what they tried to get away with in college. So I don't know if that's maybe just because of the circumstances or because he's trying to emulate Mahomes and be more random with it. But it's just, it doesn't feel all that good when he does it.
Here's Matt Burke on how the defense has to play against that version, the improv version of Mahomes.
A team like this, or an offense like this, and that has those capabilities, like, it's a two-headed monster. Like, our front's got to be good and try to corral him and rush him and keep him where we want to keep him. And then, you know, our back end has to plaster and understand, like, you're in zone coverage. Like, it's not just, they're not just going to run to you in your zone. They're going to sit down. They're going to move. They're going to break off your leverage, all those things. So, it's going to be a full team effort to try to stop this.
Yeah. I think, last week the big challenge was, hey, keep everything in front of you, but just come up and rally to the ball. And that's always going to be, that's one of the main character traits of D'Amico's defense when they're doing it the right way. With the Chiefs, they're not running the ball all that effectively this year, so it makes it a little bit easier to be disciplined and stay back and kind of have that attitude like they did versus the Dolphins last week. Of like, okay, if you run a little bit, then so be it. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get Mahomes'd.
Yeah.
That's a, and then as far as the QB scrambling, like, Mike Vick back in the day, it was like, all right, make him run to his right. Just don't let him run to his left because he's a lefty.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams is the same book when the Texans faced him earlier this year. Okay, make him go to his left. He's not as comfortable. I mean, that's standard stuff. Mahomes is elevated way beyond that.
He's Mahomes.
One of our listeners says that CJ escapes to the right too much and teams are going to scheme that up. That's interesting. I just, that's an interesting thing to dig into, because obviously CJ would be more comfortable escaping to his right.
Although that first touchdown to Nico, I mean, granted, it wasn't a shot downfield.
He was scrambling to his left
yeah. and threw it through a maze of players right to Nico Collins.
Yeah. But if they're taking away his first, you know, you want to take away their first option in the passing game, but also with a quarterback, you want to take away his first option at scrambling.
Yeah, well, and to this texter's point, to a degree, when CJ escapes to the right, I feel like a lot of good things happen on this.
Because he can throw back across his body.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think like when he's rolling to the left, he can throw back to, you know, against the grain to the right,
mm-hmm.
but he's really lethal when he's scrambling to the right and he can throw back to Nico or throw back to Dalton Schultz.
Yep.
Some of those things that should theoretically open up with the bootleg in the zone game.
That's right.
CJ's very good at doing that part of it. The old rule was don't throw over the middle of the field late in the down. That's changed in that some quarterbacks can and some quarterbacks can't.
Yeah.
And I think CJ's still very much a guy that you're okay with him throwing it into the middle of the field late in the down because he's got a good feel for what's going on in front of him.
I am, no doubt. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Here was Matt Burke. Is Hollywood Brown playing in this game?
They're not sure yet.
Okay.
This is interesting. Whoever asked this question, I couldn't tell if it was Cole or somebody else.
Okay.
But I left the part of the question in asking about Hollywood Brown.
What makes him so dangerous even if he's at, say, 50% or 60% in this game?
I hope he's at 20%. You know, it's obviously the speed. It's another speed element, and they brought Worthy in, who obviously has some speed as well. So now you're at another guy that can stretch the field. I mean, Hollywood, that's been his calling card for a long time. So, you know, I think if he plays, like, it's just another sort of top-end guy that we have to account for.
Now the Texans have a true bad boy image now in the NFL. That quote would have gotten picked up, and people would have said, Texans defensive coordinator wishes injury upon opposing player.
I think even that's pretty self-explanatory. I hope he doesn't play. We don't have to add that.
I hope he's 20%, not 60%.
I don't believe he's played yet this season, so the question is whether he comes back and is healthy enough to play in this game. And that'd be interesting, too, if Mahomes doesn't play, do they maybe consider more putting Antonio Brown out there to give Carson
Hollywood
Wentz one.
Brown,
and Antonio Brown if they can get
that
him.
Would be something.
If they can find him, yes.
He could probably step in still and get like 5 catches.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? He's probably still in shape.
Antonio Brown's definitely one of the... Yeah, Have conversations been had with anybody in NFL offices about whether or not they should talk to Antonio Brown?
I don't think so. I think you held on to this... You held on to this notion the longest that he would
play again.
They'd never close the door.
I thought that at some point after he jumping jacked his way off the field in Tampa, I still thought that he was going to play in the NFL.
You were
going
to be the last one to turn the lights out on the Antonio Brown will play.
Honestly, and I don't even know what his status. He might be indefinitely suspended at this point. I'm not sure. I don't even know. It's hard to keep.
Did he leave suspended?
I don't think so, but it wouldn't surprise. I wouldn't be surprised if, oh yeah, by the way, he still has a suspension. It wouldn't surprise me, but I don't recall that he was suspended.
Right,
when he left.
Right. Yeah. Is this time served?
Yeah.
Him sitting out the last 2 years or however long it's been.
So I'm not going to ask ChatGPT about it because ChatGPT sucks for sports information.
Yeah, they're not good with stuff like
that. One of our listeners just texting in something erroneous. You politely corrected him.
I did.
And he blamed ChatGPT, and I believe him.
Because, did he? Okay.
He had said that the last remaining player who was on the team when DeAndre Hopkins was here was Laramie Tunsil.
Titus Howard.
Which is false. There's several guys that were here when DeAndre Hopkins. But he blames ChatGPT. The last question I asked ChatGPT where I learned my lesson about, like, you just can't ask it factual stuff about sports was, I wanted a list of players from non-Power 5 conferences who are now in the Hall of Fame this century. Mm. Who were inducted, and they gave me a couple of names, and then also Ed Reed, who is from the tiny University of Miami, apparently.
Oh, that small school.
Yeah, they just threw Ed Reed's name in there. So if I had gone...
Why would you do that?
Because he's an idiot, ChatGPT. He's one of these idiot savants.
Yeah.
You know, they're just kind of... I'm reading these articles lately. I can spot some of them just by what they leave out. So I read this article about, the amount of exercise that will put you in the top 25th percentile of longevity or what have you. One of the common variables they found in this one study was 230 minutes of walking per day. So that was the study.
4 hours?
I think it was 230 minutes.
Okay.
It was whatever. I think it was just just, it was like three, it was somewhere around 3 hours. It was like somewhere between 180 and 240 minutes. I read this article, which is a synopsis of a study that was done. And not once in this article, supposedly written by a human being, did they mention, that's a lot of walking.
Right, right.
That's
a lot of time.
That is a boatload of walking. Like, not once in this article did the person who supposedly wrote this article say, like, hey, you might find it difficult to cram in 3.5 hours of walking.
That's a lot of time, man. That's a big commitment.
So otherwise, it was good. It was factually correct. I actually went back and found, I paid a fee so I could read the original study.
Oh, my God. That's
I paid a one-day
you
fee
call
to,
chat
a,
GPT
to a scientific
stupid?
Journal. Yeah, so I could. So they got all the facts right, but it was obviously written by a computer.
Right.
Because there's no human on Earth that would be like, hey, by the way, just walk 3.5 hours a day.
Okay. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Are the Texans part of the greatest day of football this year? We'll go through it. I think there's an argument to be made.